This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
A Russian invasion of Ukraine could be days away, but for many Ukrainians, the siege has already begun.
What you're already seeing, without a shot being fired, is a severe body blow to Ukraine's economy. The U.S. has pulled out all of its military trainers, as of other NATO nations. Some businesses are going to be hurt. U.S. diplomats have left Kiev and moving towards Lviv.
Plus, Texas is suing Facebook over its facial recognition technology. And why florists aren't just promoting roses this Valentine's Day. It's Monday, February 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. In Ukraine, the U.S. is closing its embassy in Kyiv and relocating its operations 340 miles west to the city of Lviv, near the border with Poland. Secretary of State Antony Blinken described the temporary relocation as an effort to protect embassy staff. The State Department has also ordered networking equipment and computer workstations to be destroyed. That's according to people familiar with the matter and internal communications reviewed by The Wall Street Journal. During a press briefing this afternoon, State Department spokesman Ned Price was asked about reports that a Russian invasion of the country could come as soon as Wednesday.
I'm not going to go specifically into a great deal of intelligence. What I can say, let me start by what we're not saying. We are not saying that President Putin has made a final decision. We have not communicated otherwise to our partners. We believe that diplomacy continues to be viable. We believe that there still remains a window to resolve this through dialogue and diplomacy.
As part of the West's diplomatic efforts, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is traveling to both countries this week. At a press conference with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky today, Scholz repeated that Ukraine's membership in NATO isn't on the agenda, a sticking point for Russia. Here's The Wall Street Journal's Germany correspondent Boyan Penchevsky.
On Tuesday, Mr. Scholz will travel to Moscow to meet Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, in order to kind of once again reaffirm the Western position, the position of the NATO allies, that they stand with Ukraine. At the same time, he will want to open a broader channel of negotiation and try and tone things down, try to de-escalate the tensions, and try and find a way of peaceful resolution of the crisis. His aide said that he will go there to also give Mr. Putin a chance to express his grievances, to outline his concerns in great detail, and so the two leaders could kind of consider a way going forward without escalating the crisis.
We'll talk about Russia's military capabilities and other threats it poses to Ukraine later in the show. Texas is suing Facebook parent Meta, claiming the company's facial recognition technology, which has been discontinued, violated the state's privacy protections. The lawsuit that was filed today is seeking hundreds of billions of dollars in damages, according to a person familiar with the matter. In a statement, Meta said the claims against Facebook are without merit and that the company plans to defend itself. Facebook settled a separate lawsuit over its facial recognition practices with the state of Illinois for $650 million. The company announced last November that it would end its facial recognition system, citing public concerns over the technology. DoorDash is planning to raise its fees on McDonald's restaurants that are too slow to prepare orders. That's according to documents seen by The Wall Street Journal. In an effort to improve efficiency and cut losses, the delivery service will charge McDonald's higher fees for orders that keep a delivery driver waiting. DoorDash also negotiated for each McDonald's store to cover the costs of refunds caused by restaurant mistakes, like when a kitchen packs the wrong burger or forgets the fries. Some McDonald's franchisees have raised concerns about the penalties tied to performance as they struggle with staffing shortages. 3M says it expects that the easing COVID-19 pandemic could reduce demand for medical masks this year and put a dent in its earnings. Masks became a billion-dollar business for the Minnesota-based company starting in 2020. Now, as the Omicron variant surge fades, 3M said slower mask sales will probably reduce its organic growth by about 2 percentage points this year. And Americans are out and about again, but they're still not going back to the office. In the first week of February, an average of just 33% of the workforce came back to the office in 10 major cities, and many companies have yet to announce return plans. The data is according to Castle Systems, which records building access card swipes. Castle found Americans are making their way back to other activities, including movie theaters, restaurants, and basketball games, at higher rates. Coming up, how Russia is already doing damage in Ukraine.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
The world is watching for a potential Russian invasion of Ukraine. As we reported this morning, Moscow continues to bolster its military presence along the Ukrainian border, with more than 130,000 troops now positioned on three sides of the country. But Russia is also using other threats, like cyber attacks and economic pressure, to weaken the country, according to Ukrainian officials. Russia, meanwhile, continues to deny that it has plans to invade or cause harm to Ukraine. Joining me now with more on this is our national security correspondent, Michael Gordon. Hi, Michael. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
So, Michael, we've been talking a lot about Russia's military buildup along the border with Ukraine. What can you tell us about the actual capabilities on the ground, land, air, and sea?
Well, what's impressive is, first, the size of the Russian deployment, which it goes beyond anything seen since the end of the Cold War. It's probably more than 60% of its ground forces and perhaps half of its air force. And there's a substantial naval complement, too, now in the Black Sea. So the size is impressive. Also, it includes some of its most modern capabilities. We're talking about battalion tactical groups, Iskander surface-to-surface missiles, S-400 air defense systems. This is really an overwhelming display of force that the Russians would use to fight NATO, not a overmatched neighbor.
What about where Russian forces are positioned right now? What impact would an invasion have on Ukraine? Would it be able to quickly overwhelm and seize the country?
No, it would not be able to seize the entire country. The Russian force is estimated to be perhaps in excess of 130,000. And Ukraine is a country the size of France. And 100,000 people is probably what would fit a very large college football stadium. That's not enough people to control an entire country. They would probably need more than twice that if that was their objective. But it is enough to advance toward the capital of Kyiv. They can make any number of moves, and they couple that with political demands that there be a change of leadership in Kyiv. That's a scenario that worries a lot of people.
What about some of the other threats that Russia poses to Ukraine, like cyber attacks and economic disruptions, what many are calling hybrid warfare?
Well, the hybrid warfare is really parcel of this major buildup. For example, they've positioned forces in Belarus. They've positioned forces in Western Russia near the border with Ukraine and in the Black Sea. Their naval forces in the Black Sea had the effect of constricting Ukraine's economic activity. They've all but blockaded the coast. And they could impose a formal blockade on short order. And so what you're already seeing, without a shot being fired, is a severe body blow to Ukraine's economy. The U.S. has pulled out all of its military trainers, as of other NATO nations. Some businesses are going to be hurt. U.S. diplomats have left Kyiv and moving towards Lviv. So just the mere massing of this force, what Ben Hodges, the former U.S. Army commander in Europe, called kind of bow constrictor effect, is having a kind of hybrid effect on Ukraine's economy. In addition, you know, they've conducted some cyber warfare, not quite on the scale with what they've done in the past, but they're clearly capable of doing more. And they're also pursuing a political scenario in which they might recognize the independence of the Donbas region in the east and use that as sort of a way to try to destabilize the government in Kyiv. In fact, just today, the Russian Duma has gone to President Putin and asked for his input on the idea to put this measure to the vote in Moscow on whether to recognize the independence. So there are a lot of tools they have to try to destabilize Ukraine without crossing the border.
And what are experts saying right now about what's the most likely scenario, whether Russia will actually invade or whether they're more likely to pursue this hybrid warfare campaign?
It all depends on the mind of one man. And so nobody can say for sure what President Putin will do. What the U.S. has said is he's put the capabilities in place to make a thrust toward the capital, to intervene heavily in the east, that Russia's most capable forces are not only in the region, but they've been whipped into a high state of readiness and preparedness to take action. It's not the sort of thing one generally does for an exercise or perhaps even as a bluff. That said, the forces could stay there for a period of time as Russia continues to put pressure on Ukraine to meet its demands. It's a matter of interpretation of what these capabilities could do. The U.S. seems to have assessed that it's fairly likely that the Russians could attack in short order. In fact, last week, some U.S. officials told NATO allies it could happen as early as this coming Wednesday. Other nations think it could take longer, or perhaps the forces will just sit there for a while. What we don't see is any serious efforts at de-escalation.
And what can you tell us about Ukraine's current capacity to handle a potential Russian attack? What are Ukraine's capabilities and what support is it getting from Western allies?
Well, Ukraine's forces have fought hard in the past. Their best forces are deployed near the line of contact opposite Donbass. And, you know, this conflict with Russia has been going on ever since 2014. So they've been fighting ever since then. And there have been times when they fought well and fought hard. Their weaponry is not a match for what the Russians have. By design, the U.S. and the West has not given Ukraine the most capable systems. It's not given them modern anti-ship missiles or sophisticated air defenses. It's been trying not to, quote, provoke the Russians. But it has given them Javelin anti-tank weapons, other anti-tank weapons, lots of ammunition, Stinger, a man-portable anti-air systems have flowed in. There's been a fair amount of that. If a conflict starts, the Russians are likely to quickly seize control of the air with their superior air defense and capabilities and air-to-air capabilities. If that happens, there'll be very little opportunity to fly in more weapons for Ukraine from the air, and they've all but blockaded the sea with their substantial flotilla in the Black Sea. So Ukraine will almost certainly be cut off from substantial reinforcement. Perhaps some things could be brought across the border from Poland, but it couldn't be on a large scale.
Wall Street Journal national security correspondent Michael Gordon. Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And finally, roses are red, but you may be feeling blue if you look at the prices for Valentine's Day flowers this year. Supply constraints and other costs have been driving up wholesale prices of long-stem red roses. They've risen between 10 and 15% from last year, according to an industry expert. Our reporter Charity Scott says florists are nudging shoppers towards alternatives.
So for price-conscious shoppers, flower sellers are offering less traditional Valentine's bouquets, which may include red roses with shorter stems, roses that are in colors other than red, or bouquets that have different types of flowers altogether.
And Charity says Valentine's Day is just the beginning of the flower season.
I spoke with a wholesaler who said that he expects that throughout the year, these prices to normalize somewhat as supply continues to improve. So no promises as to what prices will look like come Mother's Day, but we are expecting for supply to get better even as some of these other upward inflationary pressures like labor and fuel costs may stick around a lot longer.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.